Might have done this right. I don't feeling fantastic tonight, so I think she's sitting this one out, but you never know, she might be listening. So I know that she's always on Blog Talk Radio in spirit, so hopefully you, well, any of you who may be here, will send her your best wishes to get well in the chat room, which I'm hoping is going to work. So you have to bear with me a little bit because I'm at the controls now and I have no idea how they work. So I'm just going to try to log in with the link so I can see the chat room. We have an awful lot to talk about. Look, I got to tell you, it's been a rough couple of weeks, not just for me, but for, I think, everybody in Canada, but particularly people in Montreal and people in Ottawa. So I'm hoping there's some Canadians. Well, I mean, anybody's welcome to phone in from anywhere, of course, but if any Canadians want to call in and talk about a couple of issues, there's an awful lot to discuss. I have to tell you, I'm not, in some ways, I'm deliriously happy with the Canadian government and how it's handling this thing, but in other ways, I really am not, and this needs to be gone into in some detail, and we're going to get into it. It's going to be a clumsy start because I have to figure out how all this works. Okay? So just going to have to bear with me for a second. I'm going to try to launch. I see a button here that says chat. Launch chat. Kel, you are the greatest. I think there's a chat loading now. Brilliant. Brilliant. I am logged in as C as RFB Radio. Wow, that's actually me, Vlad Tepes blog. So you will, you can, you know, anybody who's here, if anyone's here, just you can feel free to message me or whatever. I'll try to keep track of the chat room as well as any callers. And there is a call-in number if anybody wants to call into the show. That would be fantastic. The number to call in is area code 347, number 237-4318. So that's area code 347. Call in number is 237-4318. That's the guest call in. So anybody who wants to join in, be part of this, will be fantastic. Be great to hear something. Be great to talk to anybody out there interested in this issue. So I'd like to start with what I think was some really good things about our government and some of our agencies. These kinds of terrorist attacks are happening all over the world. Everybody knows that. Right? But the reaction by most governments, and I think in the Anglosphere, the most conspicuously awful reaction is from the British government, who they say that not only does these attacks have nothing to do with Islam, although for some reason they feel the need to say it has nothing to do with Islam. They don't say it. It's funny because, you know, when Cameron doesn't say, "These attacks have nothing whatsoever to do with Buddhism." For some reason, he feels a need to explain they have nothing to do with Islam. I think that by itself should be revealing. I think in more rational times, before we become infected with leftism and political correctness, we would have just noticed that right off the bat. Like, why do you say this? Why don't you say it has nothing to do with Vietnamese car washes? Why does it have nothing to do with Islam? It has nothing to do with it. But he goes a step further and says that attacks of this kind are actually attacks on Islam, and it's the enemy of Islam, and so on. This really peculiar narrative. Well, our government doesn't do that. Our government has said that these are that this is terrorism, which is clearly what it is, and that it's our federal police, the RCMP, which I think probably outside of Canada is known more as a kind of a Disney character, but essentially it's our FBI, right? It's our federal police force, which overall is very good, with the exception of the looting, the illegal use of lists obtained, which were illegally obtained by the RCMP in Western Alberta, and that the RCMP in Alberta actually evacuated a town because of a flood and wouldn't let anybody back to their own homes, and then while people away from their homes, kicked in people's doors and stole their property, using an illegally obtained list, which they were specifically by federal statute were forbidden from being in possession of, and then went in using that list, knowing where this various properties were, went into people's homes and took that, and now, of course, they're claiming that they had a right or an obligation to do so, but it was looting. But short of that, the RCMP is pretty good, I gotta tell you. Canadian police in general are pretty good. And, did I mention that it was people's legally owned guns that they did that? It doesn't make any difference. It's still looting. I don't care what they stole. It was looting. Now, but the RCMP came out, they've been a little cagey about it. They said that they had a video that the guy made. Obviously, it's a martyrdom video, but they didn't say that yet. And they said that initially, they said they had a video that they were studying to figure out what the guy's motives were. But they were clearly lucid, so the guy wasn't crazy. And although, I had a chat with a lefty not an hour and a half ago who was saying it's a mental health issue. The government should be putting more money into mental health care. Yeah, like curing lefties from delusions about not Islam not being a problem. If you're talking about that, then I'm all for it. So the RCMP said the person was lucid, and that his motives were ideological and that they were political. Okay, so that sounds like the usual kind of cop-out I'm used to. It's still better than, let's say, the British government or the American government, which says things like workplace violence. Like, the American government makes up stuff which is so absurdly off the rails that I just don't know how the American public aren't actually insulted. Like, how can they not feel that they're constantly being insulted by their president when he just makes up the most absurd and obscene things? It really, really, really quite something. And then the next day, being yesterday, the RCMP came out and said religious. They said the word did it for Allah, and I think they even said jihad. So I do have a clip. I haven't uploaded this clip to the room, the studio, so I could play it for you. But I might be able to find a cheesy sort of workaround where I can play this clip through my own laptop and then have it go through a microphone. And yeah, I'm going to go do that. Probably won't sound great, but it will work. So before I do that, suffice it to say that the RCMP, Canada's federal police, sort of our equivalent of the FBI, actually did say that it was the motivations were religious, that I don't know if they used the word Islamic, but they certainly said did it for Allah and jihad. I think we can probably infer it was Islamic from that. I think we were expected that we would infer that. So I think that's something that Canadians can be proud of, is that our government is being more honest with us, with Canadians, than just about any bloody government in the world is being with their own citizens. Now, I'm going to go even a step further, and I'm going to speculate that our government would actually even be more honest with us, except that our government is probably fully aware that if they went the extra step and told us more of what is actually true, the extent to which mosques in this country are preaching sedition, hatred of our culture, and Islamic manifest destiny, and misogyny, and anti-Semitism, and everything else, that they would be accused of being a racist government, and there'd be giant revolutions in the streets, and our government would be perhaps even be brought down. So I think I have to say that I'm proud of our government to the extent that they are the most honest government in the world today in terms of dealing with the effects and intentions of Islam and being honest about it. And probably they cannot go much further, although I think it would be good to see them embark on a proper propaganda campaign. By propaganda, of course, I mean telling the truth in a way which is saleable, getting public service announcements out there, finding ways to broadcast like what they know about these different mosques and these different individuals and institutions so that we can normalize criticism of religious authority. Now, I've said this on every show, but I'd like you to know that I say it on every show not because I forgot that I said it the last time, but just because our own thirst for novelty does not mean that if something is true and important that it should only be said once and that you should move off from it or you look like some kind of whatever senile idiot. I'm not running a sitcom here. Neither is this like a Homeland or Misery. We're trying to talk about the facts of a very, very serious and existential problem, culturally and even in terms of our own lives in many cases. So when I say each week that the single most important, if not the only important, if not the only point of freedom of speech is criticism of religious and political authority, it's because it needs to be said every week. It needs to be said on a t-shirt. It needs to be said on a business card. The only point of freedom of speech is a criticism of authority. And you can say political and religious authority, especially chief among them. If not, bad. It doesn't make any difference what freedom of speech you have. Do you have the freedom of speech to say, I prefer red over blue? Well, we know what happens if you don't have freedom of speech to criticize religious authority. All the women end up wearing black. So it really doesn't matter if they prefer red over blue, because they're going to wear black. Because once you lose the freedom to criticize religious authority, well, you're going to lose all the other freedoms right after that. That's an absolute promise. That is a historical imperative. So that's my first topic. My first topic is the way the Canadian government is handling is in the aftermath. Now, I've written like a number of articles on my website where I talk about how, including the agenda and views of the site, by the way, which is sort of more or less static document I wrote right when I started the website. What I've been talking about was how I'm concerned that governments who even do react to this will end up creating some other kind of totalitarian state, like the movie Brazil. I don't know how many people have seen that. It's a very odd movie. It's kind of like it's like Monty Python meets 1984. I think that oddly though, that movie Brazil, in terms of films that I've seen, comes closest to describing what we're heading for better than anything else. So where in Brazil you've got this strange, where you know, the strange state where government and unions are kind of omnipotent, and you don't dare fix your own appliance because there's some union, which even though it might take them 3 weeks to get there, and even though you might starve or die because this appliance doesn't work before then, you're gonna be tortured and killed or jailed if you try to do work that belongs, you know, the purview of the union. And government is omnipotent, and if government makes a mistake on a form, it doesn't make any difference. They're going to act as if they did it right, irrespective, because it's easier for them to do that than it is for them to go back and fix an error. And, of course, they've taken control of everybody's liberties because there's unnamed terrorists out there, and they have to fight terrorism, so they've taken away everybody's freedom. So you might as well let the terrorists win at that point. So that's what one of my concerns, one of my running themes is we have to be careful. Now, again, I'd like to actually be clear about this because I nearly got into a minor argument with a really good counterterrorism intelligence guy in Canada who's well known. He does a lot of, he's no longer officially with the counterterrorism service, but he's a frequent guest on a lot of TV and radio programs, major ones. And I wouldn't say an argument would be putting it in too strong terms, but he does often say that people are going to have to get used to the idea of losing a few civil liberties and a few rights in order not to, you know, for a while, in order not to lose them all permanently. And I happen to agree with that. I think we are really going to have to get used to the idea. We will probably have to give up a lot of our freedoms in the short term in order not to lose them all in the long term to the Islamic threat. And it's absolutely true. My problem is that if we aren't going to declare ourselves at war with this particular enemy, and we're not going to name the enemy, then we're really just doing the same thing for them. We're going to lose all of our rights one at a time forever because we can't even say who the enemy is or that we're fighting them. It's just this, we're clinging to this illusion, this narrative of multiculturalism and that Islam's a religion of peace, and the problem isn't really Islam. It's a few people, you know, extremists who hijacked the religion. As long as we're going to maintain this lie, this myth, and then slowly just keep choking off our own liberties and freedoms, then we're not really, it's just a different path to the same place as far as the rest of us are concerned. It's got to be, you've got to be vigilant about that. Go ahead, Prime Minister Harper, go ahead and do what you need to do. And I'm right there behind you. I'll do whatever is needed for me. I'm happy to do it. But please, name the enemy honestly and say that we're fighting this thing, and then start taking rational measures, not creating a police state where we watch everybody and we're going to have to arrest a few hundred people that are anti-Islam just to show that we're being fair and even and not picking on the Muslims. I'm saying pick on the damn Muslims, because the problem is the Muslims. Well, like you look at what the UK did, and they banned a bunch of regular civil libertarians, people who really believe in freedom and equality and freedom of speech. Michael Savage, for instance, people were never planning to ever visit the UK, as far as they knew anyway. They had no plans to go there. And they banned these people just as just for the optics of it, just to say, well, you know, we're going to ban these five Islamic extremists from Lebanon and Syria because they counsel genocide and they, you know, they believe in the Sharia. If you go on and on and on, it's patently crazy that somehow the equivalent to the British government saw fit, the moral equivalence for that was... is to ban Michael Savage and whoever else is on their list. It's just completely crazy. I'm saying Canada must not do that. You can't do that. It's not helpful. And it is a crushing of our rights, and it's a crushing of reason itself. It's the abandonment of reason in favor of the optics of multilateralism. That's a problem. Now, there's a second issue. It's the second issue that I really, really... it concerns me, and I don't know if Don, if you're out there, if you want to call in, I think you're going to have some things to say about this. I predicted a number of times in a number of venues that Canada might, I shouldn't say I predicted, that's not quite right. I was concerned that and afraid that Canada might start banning our soldiers from wearing their uniforms on the street. Well, I thought that because so many other governments have done it. I think Australia, France, the UK, I think maybe one or two Scandinavian countries. Well, I'd like to make something perfectly clear here. The Muslims who do this and believe in this and support it, the Muslims who are, for all intents and purposes, soldiers of occupation, among our midst to have a uniform, that they are identifiable. The women, it's very easy. The women have a hair covering, and you can tell the degree to which they support this. I'm not talking about the kids here, by the way. Like, you can't look at a little kid, like up to whatever, 14, 15, 16, 17. It's hard to say at some point, but you can't look at a girl who's wearing all that stuff and know that and think she's your ideological enemy, because her parents may make her do it and they'll kill her. So we have to, you know, that it's just as likely to be a victim. So in terms of what you see in the street, it's, you know, and I'm not trying to do this thing about the, you know, the caveat that everybody says that, oh, well, we can't go saying that all Muslims are the problem, yada, yada, yada. No, I actually have a very, very specific way of looking at that, and I'm going to address it in a minute. Interestingly, it's practically identical to what Sam Harris says, which is actually another topic that I've got for this hour. So what you can do, though, is you can look at an adult female and you see her anywhere from a light hair covering to like the full burqa, and you can judge the degree to which she supports the ideology of the crushing of Canadian culture and values and replacing it with Sharia and Islamic supremacism and all that goes with it, which includes enslaving, wholesale slaughter, and something else which the media hasn't picked up on yet, by the way, which is taking your children and making them
in the Janissaries, which they're now doing in the Islamic State to conquered cities. Keeping in mind, of course, that Kobani is about 1.8 million people, I think it is, or 1.3, bigger than Ottawa. Kobani is a bigger city than Ottawa. I think it's 1.8 million people, which makes it almost double the size of Ottawa. I think they're talking about it like it's a town. And according to the latest ISIS video, for which they provided some evidence, not conclusive evidence by any stretch, but they certainly at least produced some evidence, which is more than the Americans did when they said that Kobani was being rescued from them, that they had taken over that town. It belongs to them. They did it with a small number of people, it looks like. Which makes you wonder, right? So the Muslims have a uniform. The women, as I say, it's not that difficult to look at an adult female Muslim and know the degree to which she may or may not hold these views based on how she presents herself. And the men, it's a little more tricky. But definitely the beard, the no mustache, and wearing a watch on the right wrist. So if you see those three things, that's definitely a uniform. Of course, if they go the full distance and they're wearing a knit cap and a freaking ball gown, like the white cloth, you know, the fabric, jute, or whatever that fabric is. If you see them in a tunic and a little cap, then that's a full-on uniform of the jihadi, right? Or of a Muslim who holds so fast to the ideology that you know what they want. It's clear just by reading the same materials that they read and by their appearance show that they support that ideology. This is really, you know what's funny? As I talk about this, I feel like, what am I, 6 years old? I mean, back before political correctness, before it became the dominant way of thinking, this stuff was all so obvious. If you saw a guy in a Nazi uniform, you knew that he was a Nazi. You didn't need to sit there and explain to people how there's an ideology and a uniform that represents that ideology, and a person who is in a uniform that represents that ideology is problematic to the extent that ideology is problematic. You didn't need to go through all that. You could just look at a guy who was like wearing a mouth, I mean, you know, whatever, like he's a full-on commie and wearing the red 5-point star or whatever. It's just new. And I don't understand why today, like, somehow we've been talked at and talked at and talked at until the only thing we know is nothing. And what's obvious and in plain sight. I mean, sometimes I wonder if the real definition of genius isn't just somebody who's capable of leading you to the blinking obvious these days. So it has nothing to do with IQ. It's just somebody who's capable of seeing through all the crap to what's actually in front of us all. Right? I guess that's what, you know, sometimes, I guess that's what you call insight, is that, you know, you can look at somebody who has a great insight is somebody who tells us something, oh my God, yeah, that's really true, like it's right in front of us. What was that haze that was between me and that thing that now is gone and I can see that thing, right? So back to the uniform. With the men, it can be a bit more subtle and a bit more difficult, but typically you can tell because it's a beard. It may be a disheveled one or it may be a groomed one, but disheveled even more so, that there is no mustache and wearing the wrist in the right hand. So we see an awful lot of that around, an awful lot of women that are in the uniform of these serious Muslims. Believe it, right? Oh, there's my phone. You see what I'm saying? There's my ringtone. With a ringtone like that, I could get thrown off a London bus, eh? So, what's all this in aid of? What am I babbling on about? Is it at all coherent? Does it have a point or conclusion? Only this. How would you rate it as a victory on a 1 to 12 scale? If the soldiers of the military of a country cannot wear their uniform in the street for fear of being attacked by people within their own country, but the enemy can feel free to wear that uniform anywhere they want, even when elements of that uniform are de facto illegal. I mean, we saw a great example of that the other day, right? Sergio Radigali, who's one of my favorite human beings, by the way. Sergio is a glass artist in, what city is Melbourne, I think, in Melbourne, Australia? Maybe he's in city. He's in one of the big cities in Australia. Sergio, if you want to look him up, he's always got a mural on the outside of his building where he does his art. And so it's usually a burqa with a circle around the line through it. He's constantly being vandalized, more by lefties than Muslims, ironically. I think Muslims are just waiting for the right moment to really take their action. But the lefties love to show their moral superiority by destroying his freedom of speech. In any case, so in Canada, what Sergio did is he did this stunt with two other people. It's almost like setting up a joke. So what happens if you have... You hear about the one where about the three guys that walked into a bank. One was wearing a burqa. One was wearing a Ku Klux Klan outfit with a pointy hood and all. And the third was wearing a tinted motorcycle helmet, right? He did that. You can see that. I think you can see the videos on my site. It's a few days back, but a quick Google search will turn it up, right? So here's... what do you think happened? There's a guy here in the chat room.
Should I wait for an answer? Bigfoot, you want to take it? You want to take a guess? Three men walked into a bank in Australia. One's wearing a burqa, one's in a tinted motorcycle helmet, and the other one's wearing a Klansman outfit, right? What do you think happened? Well, I'll tell you. The guy in a burqa walked right in. The other two guys were stopped at the door and sent home. How do you like that? The guy in the burqa walked right in the bank. They couldn't see the face on any of the three of them. But the one in the burqa walked right into this religious discrimination, not a lot of men. But the one with the Klan's outfit, which, if you ask me, is every bit as religious as the burqa is, because they were strongly Protestant, these guys. They were like a very, very specific breed of Protestants. And the tinted motorcycle visor, and they were turned away at the door. So here we have a country, both in Australia and Canada. What awful, horrible, perfect parallels, right? And in both countries, the Australian in Australia and the Canadian in Canada, our soldiers cannot wear their own uniforms on the street, on the streets of our home country, by order of the government. While the enemy, which caused this to happen with a couple of really, really feeble little attacks, one in a car and one with a 30-06, and they each took out one person. You know, my heart really goes out to those two men. I have to say, I was actually surprised at how badly I felt for these men. The man in Ottawa, perhaps more so only because he was made to stand there in uniform. He was on duty, and he was carrying C7, I think. There was two men with C7, so very, very, very fine quality, accurate and high-powered machine guns, light machine guns that our servicemen and women use overseas. But they weren't allowed to have any bullets. And to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not entirely sure that there is a more dangerous thing you can do to a person than put them out in public with a gun and no bullets. Right? There's so many different reasons why somebody might take those on. So that man, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, that's awful of me, but he was killed. And that man, the man who killed him, managed to make it to Parliament Hill. I'm sure everybody knows the story. But of course, what's interesting was the second man, there was two guys there, I believe, and both of them had C-7s, and because they had no bullets, they just had no way to fight back, right? So, because of these two feeble little attacks, our own soldiers cannot wear their own uniforms in their own countries, while our countries are fouled with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of enemies who want to destroy our way of life, our legal system, everything about us, to transform it into one of the crappiest countries in the world where that ideology is in control, are free to wear their uniforms even above and beyond what any of us can do. They can walk into a bank with their face covered. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? This is a degree of victory that, like I said, I gave the 12 scale instead of the 10. Because, I mean, I know where I put that number. I just don't think 10's enough, right? So that's a couple of the issues that I wanted to raise. I'm now fully depressed. about having just introduced this show with some of these issues. And we're already at the half-hour mark, though, so if I can figure out how, I think I'm going to try to play a tune from this huge bank of music and take a short break, get a glass of water, and come back. I wonder if that's possible. Let's try this.
As your car pulls out the driveway, and she don't wave goodbye, her last words echo in my mind. Listen, honey, I gotta get away. I'm standing here watching her tail light, as if there's some kind of sign fading into a memory. I just got tired of trying. Get a letter, a picture of a room in some hotel, sitting framed up on the table, a picture I know so well. You painted yourself into a corner, now you're trying to paint something new. And your lipstick on the letter is a goodbye kiss from you. So long, I hate to see you go, but I'll save my tears for later on down the road. How come I keep on holding on, knowing you won't be coming home? Set the table, still set it for you and me. It's become a habit, my own personal make believe.
So here's my next issue. Yeah, this is over the last number of weeks, I've been having these discussions with the Baron over at Gates of Vienna, and I was thinking about the strategy that our government and so many governments have around the world about lying to us all about what Islam is and looking progressively more and more foolish, if for no other reason than
people figure it out and know that the government's lying, and then lose faith in the government. I got to tell you, I've been, my entire life, I've been one of the greatest defenders of the United States and American actions. I'm a great believer in the Constitution and America's almost constant, almost solid move toward those goals and ambitions every year. While the United States may not, when the Constitution was first written and enacted as law, a lot of people, like especially leftists, like to dump on the states because they weren't living up to those goals right from day one. But the point is that they at least recognized those were the right goals to have, and that they worked towards those goals, and they created institutions whose job it was to achieve those goals. And they were like ACLU back in the day when they were constitutional, so on and so on, and they kept getting better and better, right? Maybe three steps forward, two steps back, but at least it was in that direction. And you look at other countries, especially anything Islamic, and you look at their stated goals and what they attempt to achieve and how they're actually moving from something akin to liberalism as we imposed on them during our horrible colonial period, which was the best thing that ever happened to Muslims. And that since we've backed off out of some kind of odd communist-inspired colonial guilt, when it should be colonial pride. Look at India. I mean, India is doing better than we are because they actually hung on to the ideals that the British left with them, and better than the British did. And so the Indians are constantly getting better and better. They're moving towards something really fantastic. They're technologically more advanced than certainly the UK. They're really doing extraordinarily well. Their wealth is growing, and they're defending their own culture because they understand they have a culture to defend. And that all came to them, in a sense, from the colonial era. Right? So, because if you look at the caste system and how women were treated, and the slavery and so on that happened before the British imposed their will and values on them, it was not a great place to live for most people. And now they're basically fighting to preserve much closer to the ideals of, say, the U.S. Constitution than even the Americans are. Well, I actually have a point to this, too. It's this. Imagine yourself to be a 14-year-old or 15-year-old cultural Muslim living in, let's say, the United States or the UK, or maybe Scandinavia for that matter, a number of other countries. But, you know, being English, I tend to follow the cultural shifts in English-speaking countries much more so than in other ones. Imagine yourself being 14 or 15-year-old and cultural Muslim. So you're basically just like any other, say, American kid, except that you have your Christmas dinner on a different night, and you know you have slightly different food. Maybe it's more curry in it, whatever. But you basically live like any other Canadian or American does, and you watch TV and you follow football or baseball or whatever. You're a regular guy, except that you have the same subtle differences that most secular Jews do, and the same subtle differences with a Catholic might who goes to midnight mass on Christmas Eve instead of, you know, Christmas Day and so on and so on. And you hear the government, you see all these things happening around the world, right? So you see all these events, these attacks and so on, and the government, you know, and the government paid demands. Like, you've got all these official government demands. This is something that Chowdhury talk. I mean, you know, we all, I'm sure, have these strangely mixed feelings about Anjan Chowdhury. On the one hand, the appropriate right amount of contempt because of the seditious, traitorous fellow that he is. But he does seem to, in some, when it suits him, he's more honest than the government, official government demands about the nature of Islam and what it all means, when it suits him. When it doesn't suit him, he's just as dishonest as any of the others. He does what Islam instructs him to do, which is do whatever is the best thing to advance the cause of Islamic supremacy wherever you are. That's the only rule. All of Sharia can be derived from that, by the way. This is, I mean, you know, yes, I'm not Robert Spencer, I'm not Stephen Colvin, I haven't got the degree of knowledge that these gentlemen have, which is extensive, and I don't have the intelligence even those men have. But I can tell you, after the years and years of studying it, as you know, by reading their materials and by my own studies and so on and so on, I can tell you this: if you want to know what Sharia is in one sentence, it's do whatever you want to do no matter whether it appears to be breaking some tentative Sharia or not, so long as it advances the cause of Islamic supremacy in your area. That means you can go whoring, and you can go drinking, and you can snort coke, and you can not go to mosque, and you do not do the five pillars. But if you're going to do jihad, you're always forgiven and you're okay. Or as long as you're doing, you know, out there doing takia, as long as you're waging jihad, either with your mouth, with your money, or with your weapons. I think, I forget exactly how Quran puts it, but if you want to know how Sharia law works and how Islam works, it's all derived from that one principle. Do whatever that needs doing to advance Islamic supremacy in your area, no matter what it looks like to anybody else. And it's, you know, it's been kind of working. It looks pretty well, actually. So imagine you're one of these cultural Muslims in one of these countries, right? You are in Canada, the United States, Australia, Great Britain. And you find out that these government-sponsored imams and the government itself is saying, oh, no, Islam's a religion of peace, and it doesn't really mean these people are enemies of Islam. You hear all the stuff. I don't need to say it. Y'all know exactly what I'm talking about. The official party line on all of this stuff. Now, we hear about it and are horrified that we're being lied to, and we're hoping that secretly it's part of some grand strategy to fight it. Some of the best commenters on my website are constantly referring to that. I think they're optimistic. I don't think they know nearly as much as we do. I think this is one of the first conflicts in the history of the world where the average person that wants to understand this is infinitely more informed than the people that are in a position to do anything about it. I don't think they understand the Frankfurt School of Law and the communist cultural Marxist influences, or what Islam is and what it's trying to do. I think really this is like a weird reverse pyramid. The higher up you go, the higher up the chain of command you go in our countries, the less they know. That's bizarre. But definitely, whether they know it or not, they are misinforming us about Islam. So you're one of these kids. I'm going to get to my point sooner or later. I promise you. You're one of these kids, and you're listening to this deception by government sponsored imams who are getting the big multicultural grants and the big outreach grants in order to, you know, help promote the you know, Islam's integration into our society and our society's integration into Islam in the nicest possible way. You're one of these kids and you hear these imams and you hear the government and you decide, you know what, I'm going to go to the local mosque and see if this is true. And you pick up a Quran and you read it. That's funny because the Quran doesn't say anything like these imams say it is, and it doesn't say anything like our prime minister or president says it is. In fact, it really, these jihadis who've been committing these attacks actually are far more in keeping with the principles and values and ideals of Islam than what we're being told by our own leaders. And I'm thinking that maybe these young men would start to feel like they'd been lied to by government and these government imams and would start to feel a lot of resentment toward that. Now, I'm not going to go as far as to say that we're causing jihad. I'm not going to go as far as to say that it's their fault that these that local, homegrown, Canadian-born, American-born young Muslim men become jihadis. But I'm going to say that if it came down to a choice between which was more likely. Because, you know, the excuse that these people use, the excuse that I often hear when I'm arguing, even with people on my side who disagree with me on tactics and strategy but not on the nature of the problem, is they say, well, you can't go saying that Islam's the problem because then you're just going to alienate them and make more of them. I mean, that's like saying in World War II that, oh, yeah, Nazism is a problem. Oh, so that means that all these sort of non-Nazi Germans are going to go, but you're offending my country's ideology, and as a leader of that ideology, you say it's, and I'm going to go join him and fight you because you've offended. That's an insane thing to say. If that was even remotely true, then all the anti-Semitism, which has been a constant, you know, to different degrees, that have been going on for the last number of centuries, there'd be Jews blowing up in German restaurants and now Hungarian and Greek restaurants. They're possibly even American, depending on how you want to look at Obama and Israel's latest problems. You see all kinds of Jewish people blowing up in the streets and in restaurants and wherever. It's just not happening because it doesn't work that way. What saying the truth about Islam is going to offend some Muslims, but that's not what's going to drive them into becoming jihadis. It'll be Islam that does that. and lying to them about the nature of Islam and finding out that the local civilian authorities, that the political authorities in all of our countries and their hand-picked imams and their sanitized version of Islam, and when they just have to, you just need a cursory look. You don't need to, these guys don't need a PhD in Islamic studies the way the new Caliph al-Baghdadi has. That's something else to keep in mind, by the way, that the leader of the new Islamic State, al-Baghdadi, is actually it's Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, right? That name's got a lot of meaning. Now, he has a PhD, which means from a Western university, in Islamic studies. So it's very funny when I hear these leaders who actually never even cracked open a Quran, except for Obama, who sure knows most of it, actually say that Islamic State has nothing to do with Islam and it's an enemy of Islam and stuff. Really? Like, let's hear what Baghdadi has to say about that. Oh, no, we can't, because they scrub all those videos off YouTube as quickly as possible. Although, at Vlad, at my website and a few other websites, if I see something that I feel the public needs to understand, needs to know, I mean, you know, that YouTube takes off. Well, I don't blame YouTube, by the way. I understand why they do it. But I'll find another place to host it. You'll find it on my site. Because some things are really important, because it's really important. You're never going to win this thing by denying reality, denying the truth. We like I tell you, not an hour and a half ago, I was in an argument with somebody I know quite well at a coffee shop not too far away, who was saying this is a mental health issue. And the only way that I could get that person to agree with anything to do with this was if I made it look like it was Harper's fault. Because this particular lefty woman was so full of contempt for the conservative governor, Stephen Harper, that she would agree to absolutely anything, providing I framed it in Harper did this wrong. So when I said, well, you know, one thing, Harper, I said, get this, right? I'm sure you're all going to get this. I suggested that Harper was wrong to tell the troops that they shouldn't be able to wear the uniform in public. And because I said Harper was wrong, she said, oh, yeah, you're absolutely right about that. That was terrible. You should never have done that. I said, in fact, what you should do is tell them that, you know, wear the uniform anywhere you want, but carry a sidearm. And she said, yes, that makes more sense. And I thought, well, actually, that's true. So, but I know the same person is one of the people who thought that Harper was going to put armed soldiers on our streets, and that's why she voted against him, because that's what all the Liberal Party propaganda said at the first Harper election. Harper's promised to have our street armed soldiers walking our streets. Do you want the streets to become just a military police state? Like, everybody was all frightened about that, right? So when I heard her agree to that, just because it made Harper look bad, I thought that was pretty funny. But at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is, here we have a situation in which the enemy can not only wear their uniforms on our streets, but wear it with impunity and wear it even in places where our own people can't wear anything similar. Like, you cannot go into a bank with a tinted motorcycle helmet or a Klan outfit, but you can in a burqa. And our soldiers cannot wear their own uniforms by order from government. And our streets, the American government's recently said that they agreed that their service people would not wear their uniforms on our streets to respect our edict or respect our regulation on that or whatever. I mean, I don't know, why not just surrender entirely? Why not have both countries entirely surrender to one guy with 30-06? I mean, is that what we've come to? There's so many possibilities. If they were to let us just have the freedom to act on it ourselves, we'd solve this problem by breakfast. Anyway. So that's the three issues that I wanted to bring up. And it's already, my goodness, you realize it's very close to an hour it's gone by, and it's just been me talking this entire time. If anybody would like to call in and contribute to this, it would be wonderful to hear you. And or if you've got any questions or comments in the chat room, I'd be happy to address it. By the way, once again, I want to send out my best wishes to Red, who usually produces this show and keeps me in line and makes sure that everything runs smoothly. She's not feeling well, and she's sitting this one out. But if she's listening from wherever, hopefully she's feeling better, taking something that helps and is comfortable. This has been a difficult week for Canadians, but you know, I suspected when this first happened, when the Montreal thing happened and then the Ottawa thing happened, I was thinking to myself, you know, I bet you most of us were thinking, well, what it's going to take is some kind of terrorist attack to wake Canadians up. Actually, as it actually happened, it occurred to me that people's views are already so entrenched
People's views in Canada are so entrenched that at this stage, when something happens, all it does is reinforce their own reasoning, whether it's good or whether it's bad. So those of us that understand the score saw this and said, well, like, we've been telling you this for a long time. And those people who have been insisting on whatever sort of fiction to preserve their own multicultural narrative would say, well, this was just a nut bar or any other number of things. So it didn't change. These events, as they happen, ended up being just more evidence for whatever point of view people already held. But again, I got to say, I am grateful to our government and to the RCMP, while not coming out and being as forthright as I would like them to be, and while probably serving to restrict our freedoms, which, if the wrong person gets into power, I think you all know who that is, these new tools that the Harper administration is going to be creating to limit freedom of speech or whatever, will ultimately be selectively enforced against those of us that are fighting for Canadian values while they aren't applied to them, as we see very much with the three men who walked into a bank, right? Okay, so that's how I see this going. I do think it's great that our government has at least gone as far as it has. I think I'll see. Let me see if I can't do that CTV. That CTV thing. Let's see now. Use jihadi motives. Let's see if we can't listen to this. And we can't. I think I can make this work. Again, this isn't going to sound great because I'm using a really cheesy method. It should be loaded up to the studio, and I should have thought of this in advance. But it's been busy here at Chateau Tepesh. Oops, that's just coming through the headphones. That won't help. How can I do this? Stand by one.
And we learned more about the killer's motive today as the RCMP revealed new details from a key piece of evidence. CTV's Ottawa Bureau Chief Robert Fife explains.
Hours before he launched his attack, RCMP Commissioner Bob Paulson says Michael Ziaf Bibo praised Allah in a video. The Mounties found it on an electronic device.
He was quite deliberate, he was quite lucid, and he was quite purposeful.
His motivations were political and ideological.
In respect broadly to Canada's foreign policy, and also in respect of his religious beliefs.
It's uncertain if the video was posted on any jihadist websites.
Our belief is that it has not gone anywhere else, but it may have gone elsewhere.
Mountie investigators are tracking Bibo's movements from the time he spent on the streets of Vancouver to his work in Alberta's oil fields to his arrival in Ottawa.
We want to be able to satisfy ourselves whether or not there are individuals who are contributing to this person's radicalization and his jihadist views.
Paulson says it's difficult to stop lone wolves like Bibo and Martin Couture-Rouleau, who ran down two soldiers, killing one of them. The RCMP had even worked with Couture-Rouleau and his family to turn him away from extremism.
Very aggressive in terms of trying to engage and monitor him.
Since last week's attacks, police have been flooded with tips on potential terrorists.
We are talking as an order of magnitude in the thousands.
I think that says it all. So at least our government had the raw courage to go that far. They did speak an awful lot more truth than I'm used to hearing. I heard the words jihad, Allah, religious. It's an awful lot more than we get out of anybody else. It's currently 9:24 Eastern Time. I hope that was informative and perhaps even entertaining. And I enjoyed speaking at you all. Maybe next week, a few people would like to call in. But I don't know. Let's hope things get better. There was a new Islamic State video where John Cantley appeared in a very different manner than he does in the previous episodes of Lend Me Your Ears, those Islamic State videos they produce quite often. It would be interesting to have people's opinions on that. It looks to me like they've turned him. I'm going to play the closing theme, and thank you all for listening to the show. And I hope to see you all here in the chat room next week.